Hello, I'm Ruth Dudley Edwards, historian and commentator.
Ruth, thank you very much indeed for talking to the History Reclaim podcast series today. First of all, from your Twitter strand, I see that you've been tweeting quite a bit about Kathleen Stock and the transgender issue. Where do you stand on the cancel culture?
Well, I stand very stoutly with all the people who are being persecuted by it. I grew up in a country where there was, in Ireland, in the late 40s and the 50s, when there was essentially no freedom of speech and very little freedom of opinion in any way. And I have spent my life actually rejoicing in being in England, in a country where one could speak one's mind and academics were free and writers were free. And it's just awful, really, to see suddenly that the young, instead of trying to push barriers out and get rid of censorship, are actually trying to restrict themselves and everybody else. It just reminds me ludicrously of Roman Catholic nationalist Ireland all those years back. It's almost a dystopian vision.
And you grew up a Roman Catholic and came to Britain because you wanted to escape that culture, is that right?
Yes, I found it very, very restrictive. It wasn't just the Catholicism, although the church had a completely disproportionate amount of influence, but it was the worship of physical force nationalism, which was a religion. And the schools had pictures of the men who signed the proclamation of the Irish Republic in 1916 after a small revolution, who became gods. And their pictures were all public buildings, they were schoolrooms. I, bizarrely enough, ended up being the biographer of one of them because I was mystified by it. I had a grandmother who was a crazy Republican when she was so Republican, so extreme in her worship of the Republican ideology, that she had a picture of Hitler at the bottom of her bed in the 1950s. And when I said, Granny, what about the Jews, having been put up to that by my mother, she said, that's British propaganda. So I knew what Anglophobia was. I knew that and I hated it. I absolutely hated it. Now, I had the huge advantage of having sceptical parents. My father was an historian. My mother was a devotee of English literature as much as anything. So I didn't have to imbibe, if you like, completely distorted vision of history or loyalty. And there was much laughter at home at extreme nationalism and extreme religiosity. But I hated it. I just hated it. I hated the constraints. I loved England. I mean, I loved England from what I'd been reading about it in all the novels that my mother gave me. And just for me, it was freedom, absolute freedom.
Your grandmother was also a suffragette, I have to add. But your father, he was professor of modern Irish history at University College Dublin in the 40s. Are there lessons that are relevant today from the work that he did?
Well, what my father did, and the more I think about it, the more amazed I am at his extraordinary tenacity, was that as a student, having done his PhD in London and made friends, his two closest friends, one of them was a Northern Irish Presbyterian, the other was an Englishman, and the three of them were all just in Irish history, and they got together to decide that they must spend their careers trying to actually provide Ireland with a history which was true and as objective as was possible, and to get away from a history which was entirely a glorification of a physical force tradition in Irish nationalism. And that's what they did, and particularly he did. You know, it was an extraordinary. When I think back about it, what I learned from it was that you have to start at the ground level. And what he did was to realise, you know, he would have students, he would try to inculcate in them a notion of objectivity and other points of view and all the rest of the things that we believe in, actually, in the history reclaimed group, if you like. You do that, then you encourage them to do research, then you encourage them to be teachers, you encourage them to write, but it will take a couple of generations before you've actually got school teachers who understand history and have got away from the narrowness. And that they achieved. And, you know, it has to be said now that although there's been a massive attempt to revise Irish history once more in terms of Anglophobia and the rest of it, this is because of the rise of Sinn Féin, that most scholars in Ireland really have been decently educated, are open-minded, and don't want to revert to the old narrative, which was really full of hate and lies.
Now, you have, if I asked you to summarise your career, picked up on some of those themes, because you're a prize-winning biographer and a satirical crime writer. Do you want to just, for our audience, summarise your career to date?
Well, it's a bit spotty at the beginning, because I thought I'd be an academic, and then I realised I didn't like teaching. Truthfully, I was at Cambridge by then. I found it very narrow. Although my father was an academic, and there were academics whom I respected, I did find them as a group rather, especially in Cambridge, terribly parochial, terribly given to having rows in the senior common room about the curtains, narrow, and I wanted a bigger world. And after a couple of false starts in that, I had a few good years in the civil service, but I realised that I wanted to write, and I had written a biography of this revolutionary, Patrick Pearse, who was worshipped. I had asked a lot of people about him. I'd looked for books about him. Nobody actually knew anything about him. There was a constructed narrative of a saint. I mean, there were many people who thought he should be canonised, and he was a man without flaw or sin. And because of some book review I wrote sometime about a terrible book on him, a publisher asked me if I'd be interested in doing biography. And that proved to be something that really suited me. And it then caused a furore, because I suggested that he was a human being and that he had failings, but I also could see great virtues. And that was really how I thought. So I then was faced, in the civil service, with a choice between having a safe career, which was an interesting one, or taking the risk of becoming a freelance writer. Because since I didn't want to be an academic, I had to be a freelance writer. So that's what I did. And I then moved away from Irish history for a time. I wanted to rest from it, and wrote a biography of Victor Gollancz, the publisher, and wrote a history of The Economist. But my interest in Ireland continued, and I got pulled into actually Irish journalism, journalism on Northern Ireland. And where I really felt that nobody seemed to understand the unionists, and they were terrible at making their own case, so I should get to understand them. So I wrote, for instance, a book about the Orange Order from the inside, in the sense that I had made friends among Orange men, and I became very much hated in national circles. So that was the beginning of it. I mean, I have very thick skin now. I had incurred some enmity writing the book on Patrick Pearse. I was a level of insult and abuse, but nothing like you'd get these days, obviously, because there was no social media.
Can I pick up on that, Ruth, just to interrupt you for a minute? Because if you say that you were subject to that kind of abuse back then, what's so different about the cancel culture today? You call yourself a revisionist historian, but in revisiting history, you're going to get opponents.
Oh, yes. Well, I don't actually call myself. I mean, I think that any historian worth the salt is a revisionist. I mean, in the sense that you write about the evidence that is there, and if new evidence comes, you may change your mind. Of course you do. You should be open to changing your mind every day in the light of new evidence. And if that's revisionism, that's revisionism. But when I was first called a revisionist, it was by people of the Republican persuasion, who regarded it as a dirty attempt to destroy the everything for which Ireland should stand. So I became used to being an enemy of some people. And when I became somebody who tried to explain the point of view of unionists and Orange men, indeed, I mean, that was the worst sin, I became really loathed in my own tribe, you might say, the nationalist tribe. Not all of them, of course, but I lost friends, and I became much disliked, but on the other hand, I was making a lot of friends among Northern Ireland unionists, who were rather better at accepting mixed accounts. You know, when I wrote a book about the Orange Order, I said some very harsh things about aspects of it. They were okay about that, because I think it's to do with the Presbyterian tradition. Presbyterians, like Jews, they argue all the time. Catholics don't or didn't. Certainly Irish Catholics didn't. They did what they were told. So we're more prone to the herd mentality.
So what's different about today and the abuse that you get?
Well, it's just so easy to abuse people. You know, in the olden days, they had to get around to sending you a letter. That was very time-consuming and difficult. I was fortunate. I had somebody in my life at the time I got my first "I wish you were dead, you horrible old bitch" letters. I was slightly taken aback by it. And he said, "Good, good, good. That means you're getting the right kind of reactions." So any time we met, he'd say, "Any hate mail?" And, you know, that really gave me the right spirit for it. And now, this was before social media got going. But the difference now is that I'm hated by an army of Republican supporters. And I'm hated. Some of them overlap with the people who hate me because I occasionally say something sympathetic about Israel and about Jews. So I'm a bad person. On my favourite tweet against me is a term of abuse is a West Briton. A West Brit means that you have British sympathies. I think of somebody describing me as an ugly old, which was the usual beginning to everything. Ugly old West Brit Jewish was the tweet, which I found rather entertaining because I thought it was a sign of my singularity that I was simultaneously a West Brit and a Jew, which I'm not. That's the level of it. I mean, there's hundreds of them at it. The army comes out on various things, the Sinn Féin army. It's just abuse, abuse, abuse. And the object, and you can see it happening in academia with the cancel culture, the object is A, to upset or intimidate you. Well, that doesn't get anywhere with me, and they know that. I retweet the choicest of the insults, and that annoys them. But they try to wear you down, and they try to wear down your confidence. You know, you're boring, you're old hat, you're obsessed with republicanism, you don't know what you're doing, nobody wants to read, all that sort of stuff. But you see, it doesn't get anywhere with me. It just doesn't. But I can see how it upsets people. I've had friends really, really upset by the sheer viciousness of it. But this isn't the same as somebody trying to get you out of your job.
You're referring to Kathleen Stock and her views on transgender issues. But is that why you think history needs reclaiming and that you support the History Reclaimed website?
Oh, I think it's absolutely marvellous. I mean, it was the best piece of news I'd had in ages that this was being formed. And I was so honoured when Robert Toombs asked me to be part of it. I think it's tremendous. I was just looking at the website again just now before you called. And it's just full of marvellous ammunition for people who care about historical decency. Wonderful stuff. And for once, because academics are not brave people. You know, that is my experience of them. They really are not. But it's actually given the braver elements of them and the ammunition of the kind that you need. It's just there. And we have to hang together or hang separately, as Benjamin Franklin said. I think it's tremendous. I really, really am. I'm almost inarticulate with delight over it. And there was so much that was good. And it gives us a platform. I mean, I have a great friend in Ireland who's also become deeply unpopular. His name is Liam Kennedy, who's one of the History Reclaimed original crew. And he did a wonderful piece, which is on the homepage, about comparisons with Canadians who are now trying to prove that the settlers, you might say, were committing genocide, exactly the same thing as Republicans were trying to say about the British government and the Irish famine. And it's really interesting, see, for him to take Canada, to take Ireland, to take the actual distortion of history in both cases and the wrongness of it, because it is untrue, because these people, they tell lies. You see, they tell, their strength is they've managed to get through to the young. And when I've said that my father, you know, in the end, that history in Ireland was rescued from being the history of people who tried to kill British, this ideology has poisoning a generation, this new one.
You said on Twitter, if we take up that theme, you said on Twitter recently that while the young think they're being progressive in perpetuating a cancel culture and not letting certain things being said, that in fact it reveals repressive tendencies. Why did you say that?
Because it is. They want to close things down. That's pretty repressive. They want to stop freedom of speech. Can't get much more repressive than that. And they don't want to learn. The proud ignorance. When I started meeting young people, and that hadn't happened in the past, young people would say, what, you mean you're a friend of that person? I think Lionel Shriver, who's a friend of mine, and is very controversial because she's a great fighter for the free speech. You know, I remember one day this 21-year-old saying to me, "What, that awful woman, you shouldn't have anything to do with her." And I said, "Sorry, what are you getting excited about? That terrible thing she wrote." I said, "What was it? What was it in the article?" He said, "I didn't read it." I said, "Why didn't you read it?" "Because she's an awful person." "But how do you know she's an awful person?" "Because I've been told on social media." It's that kind of thing. It's the proud ignorance. I watch them attack stuff that they haven't read the first line of it. They might get through a whole tweet. They're not going to read what's attached to it. And they've been taught somehow by those who are indoctrinating them that this is a perfectly reasonable position. And it's just like going back to worst, the most extreme end of the Irish Roman Catholic Church. I mean, just the absolute awful refusal to consider that there is another point of view. It was one of my father's phrases.
I was going to ask that. What would your father have said?
But he used to quote Oliver Cromwell, "Consider in the bowels of Christ that you might be wrong." Mind you, he wasn't very good at admitting he was wrong. Yeah, that's what my father would say. I mean, my father, Cleo was my father's god, and objectivity was what you strove for, even though you knew you couldn't achieve it. But that's what he cared about. That was the ideology, if you like, he lived by. Objectivity. It is your job to consider the other point of view, to consider that you might be wrong. He used to do something at every election. I was really fascinated by it. He would wait until all the leaflets had arrived, and there were a lot of candidates in Ireland because of proportional representation, and he would sit down and read all of them from beginning to end before he decided how he would vote. Because who knew, something might have changed since he last considered how to vote. And he, you know, it was always that, keep your mind open at all costs. And as I say, he did achieve a lot in doing that in Ireland, but it's the speed at which this thing has developed. I know it's been growing since the 50s, 60s, and it's all very complicated, but it's the speed now at which it's become the fashion. And the kids, I mean, it really does make one feel that it was better in the days when there was Marxism, at least Marxism, the universities to argue about. At least people did read something and they did discuss something. And now it's just mobs because it's so easy. And completely spineless administrations. And you're finding the spinelessness in publishing, the spinelessness. It's dreadful, the people who are having their books dropped because two 23-year-olds in the contract department said publishing had made them feel unsafe. Well, the answer to that should have been, well, go and find a job that doesn't make you feel unsafe. And of course, one should listen, but not to obey them because you're afraid of them.
What are you working on now, just before we close?
It's a bit uncontentious, actually. It's a history of royal consorts, which interests me because it's such an extraordinary bunch. I never went in for doing women's studies or feminist history or anything like that, but I must say, women come out of this extraordinarily well, and they remind me of Ginger Rogers' famous line about herself and Fred Astaire, that I did everything that Fred did, but backwards and in high heels. Mm-hmm. And all these women were doing this extraordinary thing in those terrible enveloping clothes and having 7 and 8 and 10 pregnancies. They were astonishing people. So I'm enjoying that book. I do a lot of journalism, however, which takes in history and Irish politics a lot. So I'm engaged in a lot of punch-ups, which keeps me on my toes and has to be said, unafraid of them. But having said that, Bonnie, I have to say, I never had to worry about tenure. I never had to worry about losing a job. I mean, I've lost some work because of it, and I've lost friends because of what I say. But it hasn't been that. I understand with young academics why they're terrified. I do understand it. But it's not a good enough excuse for being a coward. So we do have to hang together. And this is not a period that academia will look back with any pride at.
And so just briefly, perhaps in a soundbite, what makes you optimistic about the telling of history in the future?
I believe that this is a period of madness and that we will get through it and normal service will be resumed.
Ruth Dudley Edwards, journalist, author, an Irish historian and satirical crime writer, thank you very much indeed for talking to the History Reclaim podcast series today. I've enjoyed it very much.
And so have I, Bonnie. Thank you.
And you can find out more about the History Reclaim podcasts and articles on www.historyreclaim.com. historyreclaimed.co.uk. Thank you for listening.